You are listening to Fanthatrax.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
That's not true. That's impossible.
You're listening to episode 79 of Making Tracks. I'm your co-host, Mark Newbold, and joining me today is a man who, if he was a Sith Lord, he'd be Darth Maulcaster. Mark, how are you doing?
I'm very well. And that, I think, is the most appropriate name I could ever have, personally. I think that's awesome. I was a little bit worried. I almost Sith myself, actually, that you were going to kind of come up with some really bad, nasty Star Wars Sith insult. But you didn't. You took the high ground.
I would never do that.
So you are clearly the Jedi between me and you. So fair play to you. How are you doing, buddy? How's things?
Things are good. Another week, as we say this every week, another week has gone like that. It's just disappeared. But it's all been good. It's been busy with Star Wars news. Loads of stuff going on the site, as usual. It's been pretty good, I think. How about you? Been a good Star Wars week? Any new stuff come to the house?
No, not yet, actually, because it was the last week before payday. It's that lull.
Yes.
It's a deep inhale before the plunge, as Gandalf said. I got the invoice for my monthly comics, so that's paid. I've spent the last week looking at my book collection and trying to figure out exactly where I've got holes. So I've been trying to kind of like go through and find some of those kind of like things, you know, the vintage kids books, you know, colouring and pop-up books, and R2-D2 and C-3PO teach you how to work an IBM PC from like 1982 or something, that kind of stuff. So, but yeah, other than that, it's all good, really. It's all gravy. And like you said, we've got quite a bit to cover today, which is fantastic.
We've got loads. I mean, sometimes news is quiet and you sort of, you know, we can talk about anything all day anyway, so it's never a problem. But today there just seems to be loads of news. So let's just pile into it because there is loads to get through.
I'm Derek Arnold, and I get my news from Fanthatrax.
The Bad Batch. We now know that the Bad Batch will land on the 4th of May. It's a Tuesday. So the last time that this happened, I believe, was the Clone Wars finished on May the 4th last season, season 7. So we are picking up exactly 12 months on. And I don't know, but I would imagine that it will probably hit on Fridays. That seems to be the Disney Plus day, doesn't it? Get the weekend crowd and get everybody talking. What do you think? Good news that it's finally coming, isn't it?
Great news. Yeah, absolutely. Because I think, you know, we've talked about it already this year, that Book of Boba Fett's not meant to be coming until the end of the year. So it seemed like a long wait. So it's great to actually have something to kind of tide us over in between. So it's good news. And like you said, a year since, I think, Clone Wars finished. It'd be interesting to see if, you know, what the time gap is or what the overlap is actually between the Bad Batch and the last season of the Clone Wars. Because I'm sure there's going to be some kind of overlap from what we've seen in the trailer.
Yeah, it feels like it, doesn't it? I mean, the end of the Clone Wars was that scene with Ahsoka sort of walking into the snow and seeing the helmets of her troopers in the snow. So, but that was like a coda to the whole series, wasn't it? That was sort of a different sort of thing. So, but with Bad Batch, it does feel to me like it would make sense if they picked it up and like season 7 of Clone Wars was happening concurrently with the end of Revenge of the Sith. What was happening with the Bad Batch, you know, Clone Wars 99, you know, you see where they were, what happened to them, how Order 66 affected what they were doing and how they got out, because obviously they get out and sort of, as the teaser says, become mercenaries and start a life out in that world. And of course, we know from the trailer that we got that Fennec Shand is involved. So all the intrigue of learning more about her character 30 years before we see her again in The Mandalorian, and I'm sure there'll be comics and books and all sorts of stuff that fill in the gap, because she was quite clearly a successful assassin. So, yeah, I'm really intrigued to see what they do with it.
Yeah, me too. I think it's going to be a great fun series. So I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to seeing that post-Clone Wars era, that just post-Clone Wars era that we've seen from the side of Anakin and Obi-Wan, that perspective. But I think this will kind of really get down into the weeds and kind of almost see it from the general population and the clone troopers kind of perspective. So that's going to just offer like a fantastic opportunity to discuss and speculate what else could be happening around the galaxy.
Exactly. And Talking of clones and on that subject, two things quickly. The Clone Wars was nominated for an award at the weekend, Children's Animation Award, so it's been nominated for that. So congratulations to all the team involved. But on the topic of clones, another clone that we're all quite fond of, Boba Fett, Tamira Morrison posted an interview with New Zealand news site. Very good 6-minute interview. We've got the audio, so let's have a little listen to the audio from Tamira talking to his New Zealand friends.
Please welcome Temuera Morrison.
Yeah, nice to be here. Thank you very much for having me. Kia ora, tēnā koutou.
Tēnā koe, Tim. Look, before we talk about your movie, we're back in lockdown here, Tim. I mean, it's only Auckland. It's only 3 days. But we'd love some words of encouragement and wisdom from Tim to get us through. What have you got?
Well, I can't help you there, sorry. It's just one of those things. One of those things. I'm in Los Angeles, so I've got the mask on. We're working with Shields masks, rapid tests every 3 days, normal tests once a week. It's a different way of working now, but we're still getting through some stuff. So, yeah, it's a different world now.
How are you finding it? Because you would have worked on some Kiwi productions, which are pretty loose as a goose. Is it difficult working under those conditions?
No, things are still being made. It's just a little bit. You just have to go to work a little bit earlier. They take your temperature. They give you a band so you can stay on set. Then I'm one of the blessed ones. They come to my trailer to get my COVID test. So we're still filming. When I walk on set, people all are told to put the mask down. I kind of feel like Mr. Big Shot. They go, actor on set. And everyone's got to put their shield down. So, yeah, it's a bit of a procedure. So, yeah, I feel like Mr. Big Shot. Then when I leave the set, everyone's, you know, we've got zones, A zone, red zone, green zone. Yeah, so it's a bit different, but things are still being shot and being done. So, yeah.
Hey, Tim, where are you speaking to us from?
I'm in my gym. I'm Mr. Action Whoa. Man here. There's my bomb, my weights here.
Gee.
And I also got my thing here, my boxing equipment here, my mats, all my weapons. All my weapons. Was that stick fighting, everything, yeah.
Was that a person you just walked everything. Past or some sort of...
No, it's a thing I punch. Yeah, get ready. I do a lot of fighting. Quite physical in this business. I'm Mr. Action Man at the moment. It's supposed to happen 30 years ago. But hey, something about patience, I guess. Better late than never.
You don't need any of that workout gear, though, do you? You're just naturally muscle man.
That's right. That's right, Kano. I like you. Very good. Yes. Just natural. So what? Just natural. But yes, it's for prevention because you've got to do things in the movies like Occupation Rainfall. I was doing a lot of action there. You have to do fight scenes. Now, in the movies, you only see it for 1 minute or 2 minutes, but it takes all day to shoot it. So by the time, you know, it's an all-day film shoot when you're doing a fight scene. So I do all this training actually just to prevent all the injuries.
What movie are you working on right now?
I'm working on the Book of Boba. Keep it quiet, though. Can't tell anybody. Right. Keep it quiet.
Oh.
Yes.
Star Wars fans will be very excited. Are you?
Yes.
I mean, you've always been doing well, but are you particularly hot right now in Hollywood?
Hollywood is all about temperature, Jesse. As you know, it's no good being cold in Hollywood. You have to be hot. I'm basically simmering. I don't know if you know the old grandma's oven. They had cold, simmering heat. So I'm about simmering, getting ready to be hot. Maybe this December.
Tim Morrison, thanks very much for chatting to us.
Thank you
so much. You're very nice to me. Yes, here's my new T-shirt. I forgot to put that on. Look, me and Robert Rodriguez starting up a new band called Boba Fett and the Stormtroopers.
Oh, that's great.
Me and Robert Rodriguez, we're going to come out. We're practicing Billy Idol songs today. Oh, my God.
Well, Tim, once this lockdown's over, hopefully we'll see you at Spark Arena with the Strum Troopers. Thanks for having a chat.
Kia ora, everybody. Thank you. Take care.
So, quite clearly, Tim's having some fun there. Enjoyable little interview. But the big nugget you take away from that, and he says it, is that they are filming The Book of Boba Fett. It comes out in December, so don't know how far into the month we'll get that. And, of course, we've got, at the moment on Disney+, if you look at the broader picture, we've got WandaVision going. We've got a week's break once WandaVision finishes next week, and then we've got Falcon and Winter Soldier. And then there's a bit, I think there's a month's break because that's when Black Widow comes out, and then you get Loki. So the Marvel side of it's all ticking over nicely and moving on very, very well. Obviously, Star Wars has got a lot of ramping up to get to that level where they can have a week's break and then another mega series. But Book of Boba Fett, what are your hopes for that show? Do you think we'll see flashbacks? Do you think it's going to be completely contemporary in the time that it's set? What do you reckon?
I think the biggest question that needs answering really is how the hell did it get out of a Sarlacc pit? I'd be surprised if they didn't actually go there. And I guess the question is, to what level and what level of detail that they'd bother to do that? Do they go for kind of just a couple of quick references, maybe? Or was, you know, do we actually then cut and actually see a full-on flashback like we did with Cod Vanth and the Marshall episode?
Yeah.
So there's, you know, different ways of doing it. It's actually a bit of a blank canvas because really, again, this could go anywhere. I mean, we could almost have like a Tales of Jabba's Palace vibe, potentially. Mm. Or it could be something completely, totally different. I mean, you kind of think, if he's on that throne, is he going to be kind of holding the audiences like Jabba did? And you can imagine people come to him. Or is he still having to kind of consolidate his power and justify his position on Jabba's throne? So there's lots of ways you could kind of spin this. I'm just really excited to see it. And I mean, Tamura looked like he's in good shape and he's got a great workout regime. So whether or not that was partly because of some of the feedback, and unfairly so, I think, that was kind of kicking around from like his appearances on The Mandalorian. But I think it's great. He's a fantastic actor and a great Star Wars personality. So I'm just really happy that he's now back into kind of like the Star Wars fold, as it were, and actually doing active stuff.
Yeah, the options they've got in terms of flashbacks and what happens post what we saw in season two really is, like you say, it's limitless, because we saw that scene when they went back to Jabba's palace. They rebuilt the palace. It didn't quite work for stagecraft, so they physically rebuilt it, and it looked just pitch perfect to what we saw in Jedi. So that was incredibly well done. No doubts that they could do it if they wanted to. And again, stagecraft, they've got all the options in the world. That tech's only ever going to get better. So I've got no doubt now that because Boba Fett is a helmeted character, that they could quite confidently and quite comfortably go back to certain scenes in Jedi and show it from his perspective. I'm going to say it, it probably won't turn out to be anything, but that crate dragon in Chapter 9, The Marshal, ate a Sarlacc, right? I've just got a sneaky feeling it ate the Sarlacc. It ate that Sarlacc.
Oh,
that's
really
what I think. And I think that's how Fett got out. I think somehow in all the confusion of a crate dragon attacking the Sarlacc, that was his opportunity to escape. I'm going to say it. It probably won't be, but I think it would make a great dramatic, a visual moment.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, actually, then what that does is that also gives him a vested interest as to why he was where he was at Chapter 9 of The Mandalorian, on, you know, overseeing from a distance what was going on. We just think it was purely about the armor, but you could be right. It could actually be because, you know, he catches wind that somebody's going to try and take down this crate dragon, and he kind of just wants to kind of see if they actually managed to do it or not.
Yeah. So, and you made the reference to two things, to Temuera's look in those episodes when he came back. Boba, he's not as trim as he might have been once. There could be all kinds of reasons for that. There really could. And also, I like the fact that you've got a Maori actor, and we both enjoy our wrestling, and there's a lot of dynasties in wrestling, and they're generally either ripped like crazy, like a Roman Reigns or a Rock, or they're bigger, heavier set, sort of stockier guys like Umaga and guys like that, bless him. So, you know, you've got that body type, and it really fits that warrior vibe. But then again, in that little video we've just seen, you know, he's got all his workout stuff there, his punch bag and all his weights and stuff. He's clearly getting into shape, which makes all the sense, because it's probably a hard slog to be filming. So you want to be at your best, at the best you possibly can be. And it could be cardio as much as anything else, but I thought that was good. And he just looks up for it. He's got that. I mean, he's always had a cheeky edge about him, hasn't he, Tim? You know, he's really playing with the crowd there. So yeah, mega excited. The options are limitless.
Hi, this is Gareth Edwards, director of the best standalone Star Wars film since Caravan of Courage, called Rogue One. You're listening to Panther Tracks. Enjoy.
Somebody else who's in heavy training as well, Ewan McGregor. Did you see the images of Ewan? I mean, he looks like he's in great shape, doesn't he?
He does. I don't recall, beyond episode one, really seeing much of Ewan train and stuff. But because obviously the kind of clothes that they wear and as Jedi, it's not like it's a physical, it's part of the actual character build. Like, for instance, if you become a superhero, stuff like that, you need to have the physique of a superhero to a degree. I'm guessing he's just getting back into game fitness. So possibly, again, maybe this means that, yeah, he's not going to be exactly sat around building sandcastles on Tatooine. It sounds like he's probably going to be doing a lot of action and a lot of running around and stuff. So that's fantastic news. So personally, I'm just envious about all these people who, all these celebs who have these gyms at their home. You know, this is me kind of sitting here staring at my Boba Fett helmet that I would wear, thinking, yeah, they're going to start calling me Boba Fett the next time I put it on, because like, the gyms have been closed, you know, they're going to be closed now till April. So very lucky indeed.
Because Obi-Wan as a character, or Ben, I guess, he's kind of transitioning into that Ben character, if you like, at this point. He's out in the desert. It's hard life, you know. Fett's lived that hard life. Cobb Vanth has lived that. You know, all these Tatooine, either natives or people who've moved there, have to exist with what they can get their hands on, you know, a moisture evaporator to get a bit of liquid out of the air or whatever it might be. So it's a hard life. Of course, when we see Alec Guinness as Obi-Wan in A New Hope in those robes, they're probably quite cool for the desert. They're probably pulling a bit of air and cool it down, and it's probably quite sensible. I don't know necessarily that we'll see Obi-Wan in those robes all the time. It'll probably be more of the outfit you see him at the end of Revenge of the Sith, but I don't know. So because he's had to live off the land, he's still, you know, at this point, Obi-Wan's in his late 40s, early 50s, about the same age as Ewan and me. He's got to be in good shape to survive. Not like Luke on Acto, because on Acto, it was a different sort of environment, wasn't it? You know, the water was there.
Yeah.
You know, he could go fishing, that whole sequence in Last Jedi when he's fishing for that fish thing, and caretakers are there. So, you know, they're probably there to assist and help him as well. So he wasn't in isolation like Luke was. This is a lot tougher, to my mind anyway, physically and environmentally, just a lot harsher and a lot tougher. So him getting into shape for that kind of bodes well, in the same way as Tem getting into shape for Book of Boba Fett. Two shows I think we're both really excited to see.
Hi, this is John Morton from The Empire Strikes Back. I'm Dak Ralta, or Bespin Boba, and you're listening to Fantha Tracks.
So this past week, Fantha Tracks were involved in Hasbro's Star Wars Fan Celebration, which saw us and a number of other sites reveal some new figures coming to the Black Series line and the Vintage Collection, as well as a helmet. So our reveal was the Last Jedi First Order Stormtrooper helmet, which is going to be retailing for about $99, which by the time it gets its way to the UK will probably be about £99. so we've got that coming. That was our big reveal, and it looks fantastic. The box art is gorgeous. But down to the figures, we've got the Black Series Wrecker, of course, from the Bad Batch that we've just been talking about, for the Vintage Collection, IG-11, and Lando Calrissian in his Bespin outfit from Empire Strikes Back. What were your first thoughts on seeing these, Mark?
Okay, interestingly, the image jumps straight to my mind right now. With Lando, I kind of get a slight Power of the Force 2 muscle kind of vibe about Lando.
Yep, same.
He's kind of, they've kind of given him a bit more girth, shall we say. And to be fair, I mean, it looks like a good figure. I mean, the sculpt's pretty good. Yeah. So I think it might just be the folds in his tunic. But yeah, they've got a nice soft goods cape, which I think we're quite proud of, because I've managed to really kind of nail the print detail which you got on the inside of the cape. It's just a nice little touch. So I think that's fantastic. And IG-11 figure just looks great. I can't get enough of these kind of assassin droids. At least how they've posed him in the stills that are on the site, there's a little bit more movement to him. You know, he doesn't feel quite so rigid. I mean, obviously I'm thinking back to the IG-88 vintage figure, which is, it's straight up static and you can't really do anything with him, bless him. But this one's got like some movement, got some like elbow joint movement and stuff. So I think he'd be quite a fun figure to kind of pose and have a play with.
You know me, I pick bits and bobs up as and when I see them, and if they catch my eye, it's generally packaging that grabs me. This IG-11, but it's one of the few figures I've seen and thought, I want to buy two of them because I want one to open. I want one in packaging and I want one to open. I don't normally do that. So, yeah, I totally get that. Because like you say, IG-88, he was, you know, Bill Hargreaves built him for Empire and he's stiff-armed and stiff-legged and he was a mannequin, essentially. And as soon as you saw IG-11 in sort of the first episode of The Mandalorian, what I love about the way he moves, and it's all down to the animation, it was just genius, was when he sticks his arm out, you can see almost feel the hydraulics and like the rubber stoppers. You know, his arm will drop into place and there's that little boing wobble about it. You know, he is spring-loaded. That's the word I would describe IG-11. He's like spring-loaded. He's ready to go. And that figure, and the 6-inch figure, the Black Series figure as well, when that came out, both give that feel of, yeah, he looks ready to snap into action. I really love that design.
Maybe actually that's what they should do. They should do a 12-inch spring-loaded IG-11.
Yeah,
you know, you press a button on the back and, like you said, his arms spring up into different poses and stuff, and then you kind of like click him back in, and that would be quite fun. The First Order helmet looks great, really. I've got a couple of the Black Series helmet, and in fact actually I've modified one of the Black Series post helmet for my own Resistance pilot helmet, but I use my costume. You know, compared to a few years ago, the detailing and the tooling and the quality of the actual kind of helmets are, you know, really good.
Yeah.
So that's definitely one I'm probably going to pick up. I mean, I have had the Anovos helmet, but this, it feels slightly more solid. It feels slightly more kind of like legitimate. It can take a bashing,
yeah,
which is quite nice.
And it's got the voice changer facility as well, hasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, that's been a great thing with all these Black Series helmets. They have some kind of voice manipulation or have some kind of gimmick, shall we say, for the Boba Fett helmet, bring the stalk down and that springs down. So that springs down and it's got like a little HUD on it and that lights up and it's great. It makes it immersive, but it appeals really well for collectors because of the quality of the helmets, but also it's great for kids because they can actually kind of like role play and cosplay with them and have fun with them. So unfortunately, it just means that some people might have to buy two.
The Hasbro would hate that, wouldn't they? They'd just hate it.
Oh, they'd be gutted.
Yeah. And the final reveal was Wrecker. So, but of course, yep, we've got the Bad Batch coming, and they're literally on pretty much within, if it wasn't the same day, it was within a day or two, season one of Bad Batch coming on May the 4th. So this was a really well-timed release. And again, in that packaging, just looks lush, doesn't it?
Yeah, marketing synergy at its finest, I think. And I wouldn't be surprised as if we see more of the Bad Batch figures get released kind of on the run-up to the actual like debut of a series. That, again, makes sense, you know. I'm still holding out for a nice kind of like five-pack or something for 3¾-inch. I think that would make an amazing shelf display, but we'll see what the good folk over at Hasbro have got up their sleeves.
Yes, I'd be all over that. I totally agree with you. I think that would be fantastic. I love those packages. When they do the three packs, I'm all in for those. I think they look lovely.
Yeah.
And one final little thing, Hasbro revealed that there will be a Hasbro Pulse UK. That's got to be a good thing, hasn't it? You know, we can, you know, we've got the Razor Crest projects, all your Hasbro Pulse stuff. It gives the UK a good option to get onto these trains nice and early, doesn't it?
So it's kind of caused a bit of debate in the Molcaster house. And I'll quote her here. My girlfriend basically said, "We're never going to get married if you buy all that shit." When I mentioned the fact that, it looks like Hasbro Pulse are coming. But yeah, no, it's great because obviously at the moment it's like, was it US and Canada only? And so, you know, they do have exclusives and sometimes they have what, like restocks and stuff like that, which obviously we can't get hold of. So two things. I think one, it really shows how popular the Hasbro figures have really become in the last, what, 18 months to 2 years. And it's going to readdress the balance, which will maybe put a few scalpers' noses out of joint. But hey-ho, that's, you know, the risk you take. Will definitely be up for a membership for that, I think, because that's going to be great. I think hopefully if the products and the figures and that keep on coming in the droves that they are at the moment.
Totally agree. Good reveals. Nice to be involved fan sites. We were thrilled to be a part of it. Stay tuned to the site and to the podcast. We'll be delving into more Hasbro news as and when it comes.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
Mandalorian's great.
Yes, it
Mandalorian's
is.
Mandalorian's awesome.
No, if they did the whole series the way this thing looks, like a spaghetti western in space, I would have been I like Blade Runner.
Here's what's amazing, what you just said. So I was 12. My aunt and uncle were what they used to call rotoscope artists. Rotoscoping was the original special effects by hand. They would have to hand paint individual frames of movies to do things. And they told me, I said, "What are you working on?" Because I wanted to be in the movies. I was 12 years old. And they go, "We're doing this like really dumb movie. It's basically like a spaghetti western in space. It's called Star Wars. And we're drawing in the laser beams." So literally the people who first worked on the original Star Wars thought it was a spaghetti western in space. And that's what you're what you're picking up on Mandalorians. Clearly Favreau, you know, knew that, and that's why he's so great as a director, John.
Yeah, and they're like such huge, ridiculous fans of it. So I think it works for me not knowing a lot about it. So then the weight of it, which I didn't understand until the first season came out, and then like this whole new group of people were coming up to me, super polite Star Wars fans. At least when they meet you. I don't know how they are on the internet. I haven't read anything, but like they come up very polite and like ridiculously passionate about, it's like sports passion for a show. So
for sure.
I've got, it's been real cool that they came, you know, It's funny. I get shit, though. They go, I never heard a Boston accent in a galaxy far, far away. And I always go like, well, how about English? You don't think it's weird that they're all speaking English? What was the question? The whole thing's ridiculous. Yeah. There's a Sasquatch.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Wookiee. What I love is Han Solo still speaks in English to him. And they both understand each other, but he doesn't grunt like him and he doesn't speak in English to him. But it works.
You can't start using that kind of logic in Star Wars or the whole thing falls apart pretty quickly.
Exactly. Then they should leave my Boston accent alone.
So you just heard there Rob Lowe on his podcast and guest Bill Burr talking about Star Wars and The Mandalorian and all sorts of cool stuff. And in there, two things that I thought was worthy of conversation. One, Rob Lowe's aunt and uncle worked on Star Wars. I had no idea. That's completely come out of the blue and blown me away. And two, I love Bill Burr's take on the accent thing. He's right, isn't he? I mean, the original Star Wars was filmed here in the UK, so Lucas gets a lot of unknown to the American audience, known to us, British actors to fulfill those roles and be the bad guy Imperials, you know, your moustache twirling British bad guy type thing. But why not have a Boston accent? It's not out of place, is it?
Not really, at least not to this Brit, partly because I don't necessarily start to identify regionally with American accents so much. Obviously, if they've got like a really heavy kind of southern drawl or something like that, then yeah. But to be fair, and this is no slight on him, I didn't really know who Bill Burr was until he was in The Mandalorian, because I don't watch Saturday Night Live or anything like that. Because again, that's kind of more of an American kind of show that we kind of know about, but it isn't very well kind of supported over here, I don't think. So, you know, as far as I was concerned, he just sounded like Mayfeld. But, you know, it's a big galaxy. When I listen to the audiobooks, which I tend to do a lot, sometimes Mark Thompson, who does a lot of the kind of narrations, he will obviously use regional accent. So for instance, like with like the Twi'leks, they tend to have like a French Italian sometimes kind of accent, and you know, there's like the Russians were used quite heavily for the Chiss in Ascendancy. But every now and again, when they stick in like a Scottish or a Welsh accent, it kind of stands out really, really obvious. But you kind of think, well, galaxy's going to have loads of different accents and stuff, you know, planet to planet, but also continent to continent. It's just how language and people develop. So it doesn't really bother me too much. I always try and take the character as a whole. Does the person kind of fit the character in respect to like their characterizations and also then their look and, you know, the accent? So no point did it really pull me out. And I think it's just quite nice to have a bit more extra texture in it. It's all fine by me.
The one thing that I don't get is, for example, when they have taken the nationality and transposing that onto the character, to me, if you have a French accent, the relationship to France is completely irrelevant. If you have a character using a Japanese accent, the relationship to Japan is completely, it's nonsensical, because Japan doesn't exist in the Star Wars galaxy. So there's no, why would you have that? And the Clone Wars did this, you know, you mentioned Mark Thompson does the Twi'lek voice is a French accent that came from the Clone Wars. It's a shorthand. And to me, it's a shorthand that works really, really well in audiobooks, but doesn't translate so well to live action or to animation, I should say. So the accent is irrelevant. But then if you've got a character who, let's say a Scouse accent came up, if he's just saying the words with a Liverpudlian accent, that's fine because it's just an accent. But then if he starts talking in that sort of Scouse dialect, in that way, the patterns and the words, the phraseology, then that pulls me out, because it's all of a sudden you've suddenly got Freddie Starr's turned up in Star Wars. It's like, why? So Bill Burr is 1,000,000% right. It's like, why not have a Boston accent? We've got a very posh English accent. We've got Daisy Ridley, who's quite clearly, Ray is clearly from Watford. These accents that, it, like you say, it's a huge galaxy. So why wouldn't they speak like that? And also in that talk, Rob Lowe talks about his aunt and uncle, who were rotoscope artists on the original Star Wars. I mean, how have we got 42 years, 43, 44 this year, 44 years into the saga, and don't know that Rob freaking Lowe, 80s icon, his aunt and uncle worked on Star Wars? How did that evade us? That blew me away more than what Bill Burr said, really.
It's amazing, isn't it, how every now and again, somebody you know will be like, oh yeah, I know somebody who worked on Star Wars, or, you know, whatever. And obviously, the more films there are and the more TV shows, that's going to become probably more commonplace. But you just kind of go, wow, that's just like, that's something that he's kept in his top pocket. You know, you would have thought we would have heard about that. So be interesting to find out exactly who they were. And let's get them on the show.
That's a great idea.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
That is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Okay. You've set a mission now. We've got a mission now. We've got to find out all the details of the rotoscoping aunt and uncle of Rob Lowe. It needs to be done.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Vanessa Marshall, and you're listening to Fanta Tracks.
So moving into her post-Star Wars career, as she is, and successfully, she's got lots of work lined up and on the go. Daisy Ridley is about to star in Chaos Walking with Tom Holland, who we'll get to in a moment. Whilst doing the promotional push for Chaos Walking, she did an interview where she said that she would happily play Spider-Woman. Now, which version of Spider-Woman we don't know. Mark.
Yeah.
John Boyega recently used the wonderful phrase of being in a big franchise is a bit like being in a luxury jail, which I really, really enjoyed that phrase. I think it's a great phrase. He's now moving beyond that. Golden Globes is your speaker tonight. He's nominated for Small Axe. So maybe by the time this episode comes out, it'll be a Golden Globe winner, fingers crossed. And he's trying different things, and Daisy's trying different things, but she doesn't seem as averse. Maybe that's a strong word, but, you know, she seems more open to diving into another big franchise. And she's just worked with Tom Holland, who is Spider-Man. So yeah, there's some sort of sense there. Exactly. Yeah, he's Spider-Man, she's Spider-Woman. And you know, that could work. And she could be Spider-Woman for quite a long time in the role. Do you think it would work? Do you think Daisy as Spider-Woman would work? Have you ever heard her do an American accent? Now, there's a question going back to accents, previous topic.
I don't think I have. Not off the top of my head. But I think she'd be great. That's why they have like dialect coaches on films to help with stuff like that, pronunciation and kind of accent and stuff like that. So as to obviously her saying that she'd love to play Spider-Woman, I think unless you're feeling really kind of secure in the kind of roles that you want to do and the roles that you have done, it would be probably crazy for anybody to publicly turn down any role. I mean, like you said in the article, like there was rumors a couple of years ago that she was going to be playing Batgirl.
That's right.
So, you know, and I'm sure if we were to go and dig up kind of tweets or articles from that era, she was probably asked at a press junket at some point and was probably said, yeah, sure. You know, if it comes my way, I'd love to do it. I'd be interested because it just keeps the door open. And I'm sure actually if you turned to John Boyega and said, are you up for playing, I don't know, a superhero in an upcoming Marvel thing? We've heard you've been, you know, potentially being cast. I'm sure he's going to say, well, yeah, you know, I'll be up for it. You know, it's one thing to kind of talk about the process and the sacrifices you have to make for these kind of shows and these kind of studio movies. But then it's another to kind of categorically turn around and say, no, I wouldn't. So, yeah, I think that's my kind of point. I mean, I think it's kind of good PR, isn't it? Just to for herself to say, well, yeah. And unless, of course, there was like a role, and I'm sure there probably is some kind of roles that actually some actors would be like categorically, absolutely no, you couldn't pay me to do that. But it might be something along the lines of you've got to sit in a chair and have 8 hours worth of prosthetics on and makeup, that kind of thing. I can understand that if there's like a portion to roll. But for something like for Daisy, who's really physically active and, you know, she really kicked butt and you saw those training videos that she did in Rise of Skywalker and stuff. So it's not like the physicality is going to be a far reach for her. I think why not? She could be great. And it'd be interesting actually to see what the chemistry is between her and Tom Holland in this film that's coming out soon.
Yeah, it will. I mean, I think they filmed it a while ago and it's had a few issues and they've done reshoots and such. Yeah, but that's no criticism. Every film has reshoots, you know. And I think with their schedules, I would imagine the scheduling has been the big issue for those guys because obviously Daisy had done Rise of Skywalker, which I think they turned it around reasonably quick considering the situation that they were in. But nevertheless, significant amount of time. She's moved on to other projects. Tom Holland is crazy in demand because, like you say, of his Spider-Man stuff and he'd filmed Uncharted and both, you know, have a lot on their plates. And it will be interesting to see how they bounce off each other. There's a kind of a quirky awkwardness about their first meeting, which is very Tom Holland. I don't know if you've read the interview he did with GQ, but he mentions the first time he met Robert Downey Jr. And went over and he's thinking, doesn't look like I expected him to look. And he goes over and he starts chatting to him and it's great to meet you. And then Robert Downey Jr. walks in the room and he realised he'd been talking to his stunt double. So, which I thought was like, that is so Tom Holland.
Amazing.
So, but yeah, I think Daisy getting into a big franchise like this, the physicality side is completely correct. I've got to say though, and it always makes me laugh, she runs like a little old lady. When she runs, she's got her elbows stiff and she runs like a little old granny. It always makes me smile.
I've not noticed.
But, you know, it just sticks out to me. Like, it's how my mom used to run. It just makes me laugh. Like you say, the voice training, first person I thought, Andrew Jack, who sadly passed away last year, you know, he's the voice dialect coach. Yeah. There's people like that who can work on an accent. And like I say, I've never heard her American accent. I'm sure I think back to when Boyega was cast as Finn and they were like, okay, we've got this English actress who's got a very English voice. And then you've got Boyega, who would have had, presumably to their ears, in exactly the same voice, can you do an American accent? And Boyega bangs out
nails
that
it.
Absolutely on the nose American voice. It's like, oh, wow. Well, Finn now, that's how Finn talks, you know, because, wow. I just wonder in the casting process whether that was reversed, whether they ever thought, let's give Daisy a go with an American voice and see if she can do it. Some people can. Tom Holland is a natural at doing that. This happens a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, when Hugh Laurie was doing House and half the cast didn't know his English until the rap party. You know, and he just, and like, why are you speaking in that weird English voice? That's my voice. So it happens a lot. And it goes back to what we were talking about a minute ago, the Bill Burr thing and Rob Lowe. You know, there is a difference between dialects and accents. You're taking on an accent. It's almost like a regional thing. It's just a different way of speaking English. I'd love to know whether Daisy can do that, whether Daisy's got that in her arsenal.
Do you know what? I would think so. I would think that probably, and this is just me guessing, I've not even looked, but I would think that's something that they covered in their training, that they probably have to learn how to do a generic American accent, for instance, if there is such a thing. Apologize to all our American listeners if I've just completely insulted everybody. But then it's that whole thing again. It's like everybody thinks that the Brits pretty much sound really well spoken, and obviously if you listen to his podcast, you know that's an absolute fallacy. And at the same time, again, if you watch like cartoons, if you watch like Family Guy, and if you watch like Simpsons, everybody who's from Scotland sounds like Groundskeeper Willie. That's cartoons are used to those stereotypes. Again, if they were going to go down that whole route of let's try and kind of keep the Imperials and the First Order being kind of like stiff-ass Brits, and then the Resistance and all those people being American, I'm sure they may have asked. I'm sure that's probably come up. But again, it might just be, it doesn't necessarily matter if she, you know, she has got a British accent or if she's got an American accent, because surely it's better to do what feels comfortable and do it well than kind of try and force somebody into a really awkward accent and potentially just offend people as well.
And also I think with Marvel, you know, let's say this Spider-Woman rumour has any truth or legs to it.
Eight legs.
Exactly, well done. And Marvel have been geniuses at casting pretty much across the board. I find it difficult to find any actor who wasn't just absolutely nailed on for their role in the Marvel films. Apart from actors who wanted to walk away, like, you know, obviously Ed Norton didn't want to do Hulk again. Or Terrence Howard, who didn't want to carry on playing Rhodey, and of course Don Cheadle comes in and absolutely nails it. You know, if Daisy was cast as Spider-Woman, you've got to go in with confidence thinking Marvel don't generally screw these things up. They're pretty much bang on. And for her to be in another franchise, given her popularity, you know, the following she's got, would be a smart move for everyone, wouldn't it? Be a great move for Marvel to put attention on that character, and a great move for Daisy to keep her profile really high.
I guess it comes down to whatever projects she's got coming up. So, and she's not probably going to be at liberty to say that. And also how founded these rumours are about a Spider-Woman movie in general anyway. I don't know. If good old Daisy does pick up the role, then cool for her. And I'll be, you know, first in line to go and see it at the cinema.
Hey man, it's me, Kevin Smith, Star Wars fan, Fantatrax fan.
Tom Holland, our current Spider-Man, our third Spider-Man, auditioned for the role of Finn in The Force Awakens way back in the day, and according to Tom, it didn't go well. Now, he's gone on record as before saying he's not really a Star Wars guy. I know Spider-Man refers to The Empire Strikes Back in Civil War, the battle at the airport, and all that sort of stuff, and he's got his Star Wars figures, he builds his Lego Death Star, so Spidey's a Star Wars fan. But Tom Holland doesn't seem to be such a Star Wars fan himself. And he does talk, and it's fair enough, he's only in his mid-20s, isn't he? So what doesn't need to be. But he does talk about, in this piece about auditioning as Finn, the role that he had. And it sounds very much, it read very much like it was the scene where Rey and Finn and BB-8 are racing towards the quad jumper, and it gets blown up, and then they run to the Falcon. Because he's talking about the little droids beep, beep, beeping, run to the ship sort of scene. So it very much feels like it's that scene. Might not be, but that's how it read. And he's completely bemused by what BB-8 is and the whole scenario. Suffice it to say, it didn't go well, and Tom Holland wasn't Finn. And thank goodness for everyone, because John Boyega was, and then Tom Holland goes and becomes Spider-Man. So what are your thoughts on this? Tom Holland auditions for Finn, doesn't get the role. Good thing or a bad thing?
I think, actually, in fairness, probably a good thing. Tom Holland, to be fair, is, like, he's my favourite Spider-Man. And again, I don't know if it's because him as Peter Parker is now affecting my thoughts on this, but I just don't think I could see him in a Star Wars film. Not as like a stormtrooper. I mean, there's like a physicality, gravitas and presence, which I think John Boyega has. I mean, they both kind of got that kind of excitable energy. And also, I don't know if he'd be like really too young to realistically play a stormtrooper. I don't really think it's a huge loss to Star Wars because we've got him in Spider-Man. Those auditions, when they were initially searching for Rey and Finn, these were big, wide casting calls. So I'm sure a lot of people, a lot of people auditioned for the role. You know, and again, actually, I think there was different stages in the audition as well. I don't think it was just like a single audition. It was like, you know, multiple auditions. So there were probably people who auditioned for a role in Star Wars, but didn't even realize that it was going to be Star Wars because it was so early days. And I even believe that some of the stories that Daisy and John said, it sounded like it could have almost been the Hunger Games that they were reading for, the scenes that they had to do with the two kind of characters and stuff. He might have been in consideration for it beyond just a single audition. Who knows? I wouldn't be opposed to seeing Tom Holland in a Star Wars film coming up. I think that would be quite fun. But also, it's that whole thing, isn't it? Like, as soon as they become synonymous with a specific character, then it's also very hard to then sometimes detach themselves from that role. So it might even be like that with Daisy and becoming Spider-Woman. Actually, it's like, you know, we're going to be sat down looking at Ray in Brooklyn. So who
that's
knows?
A good point. One thing that struck me when this news came out, and it made me smile for a specific reason. One, I'm not overly knowledgeable on that whole casting process for those initial roles. I'm just aware that the guys that got them. But like you say, I think Hayden Christensen, I think he was like one of 1,500 people that went for the Anakin role in Attack of the Clones. And so that makes all the sense. But with this particular role, one thing that struck me was, I think there's a perception that when Boyega got the role, and this is a negative thing, and I think this is why this is, to me, was a great thing to read. The perception to me was that he was the best black actor to get that role, that it felt like that was the casting brief. And yet I always wondered whether or not that was the case, whether or not they were just going for the best actor period, that there was all these different people going for the role, and it didn't matter the colour of the actor, because that wasn't necessarily the focal point of what Finn was about. That they weren't specifically saying, this is going to be the first black stormtrooper in Star Wars, so we will only see actors of colour, be they from the UK or the States or wherever they might be. We just want the right guy for Finn. And you've just said it, Tom Holland is just magic as Spider-Man, just charming and watchable and enjoyable. And you see Boyega as Finn, who's just a bottle of pop and full of energy and ready to go, and you watch him mature through those three films. So they totally got the choices right. It just made me pleased to very obviously see the fact that it was just clearly they just picked the best guy for the role, and the best guy for the role, regardless of colour or any other factors, Boyega was the guy, wasn't he?
Yeah, no, he was. And I think it does depend. I mean, I know friends who've written kind of scripts and have basically said, we will take whoever is the best person. And by that, they haven't even really identified the, like, you know, the gender of the character for a specific role. Now, obviously, that's in the indie films, and I'm pretty sure we get some kind of casting notes for...
Oh, yeah. It was the Kenobi show. It was the two female actors, or actresses, I should say, that were being cast for the Obi-Wan Kenobi. And yes, they were quite specific in the age and the athleticism and all the obvious things. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you are right. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess it also depends upon... obviously, at that point, they've probably got an idea that we're going to have Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan Kenobi and Hayden Christian as Anakin Skywalker / Darth Vader. Yeah. You know, there is that thing like, actually, you know, now we can start to fill in the gaps and try and create a bit of diversity in the cast and stuff like that. But potentially, I guess, with your two lead roles, it wouldn't have mattered, and I don't think it would have changed anything in my mind, at least to me personally, if Rey was black and Finn was white, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I'd love to get some of those early audition tapes, you know, like the ones we got from A New Hope, you know, with Kurt Russell and that auditioning for Star Wars. I'd love to see who else, like, there must be loads of people who auditioned who absolutely ballsed it up, so haven't actually admitted to the fact that they, you know, famous people haven't admitted to the fact that they could have, like, auditioned for Star Wars, because there must be hundreds of people, because you would, wouldn't you? I mean, even if they were, like, you know, the casting kind of, like, criteria came out, we're looking for a male English guy between 28 and 35, you know, I'm a little bit older, I'd throw my hat in the ring, just because you never know. Some magic happens which they weren't expecting, and then suddenly, actually it turned the whole search and the casting direction on its head, and then you kind of think, well, let's maybe explore this different direction and see where it leads us. So
I'm glad they went the way they went, because I wouldn't swap Boyega for anyone. I think he's a diamond, and Tom Holland is completely the right guy for Spider-Man. So everything worked out well.
Awesome. So we've kind of talked about quite a few different topics today, which is great. Unfortunately, no listener's question this week again. But, you know, as Mark said last week, our sacks are empty. So if you want to fill our sacks, you can get in touch. And you're welcome to send us an email or a voice message or carrier pigeon, telegram. It doesn't really matter. However you send it, we will read it out. So, Mark, do you want to let the good listeners know how they can get in touch if they want to?
Nothing would make me happier. And yes, fill our sacks, please. Fill our sacks. And if you want to be part of the action and stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit FanthaTracks.com or check out the free FanthaTracks app through the App Store to follow us on your mobile device. Like I just said, reach out to us, send your email, listeners' questions, radio@FanthaTracks.com. Comment, like and share on any of our social media feeds @PantherTracks, and be sure to subscribe, leave a review on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Semple for composing the PantherTracks intro. And if you listen carefully, it's a new intro today. It's a new improved intro. So give it a good listen. Adam O'Brien for our wonderful Making Tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers.
And just remember, of course, if you want to reach out personally to myself or Mark, Mark can be reached on Twitter and Instagram @prefect_timing, and I am on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram as M Mulcaster. Mark, have a good week. I'm sure you're going to be busy as always.
Yes, there's always stuff going on. I've got a notepad in front of me with things that need to be marked off and ticked, but first job, dust, mop and clean the living room. That's my big job today.
You better get to it, Cinderella.
Thank you very much.
So, right, everybody else, stay safe, take care, and we'll catch you in the next episode.
Coming up next on FanthaTracks Radio, it's Desert Planet Discs.
Hey, Nanako, it's me, Taiko. I'm heading up to the farm today. Anything you need me to bring to your husband's family?